TV Kids Festival. I'm Kristen Brzezinski, Executive Editor of TV Kids, and I'm speaking with Sarah DeWitt, Senior VP and General Manager of PBS Kids. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Kristen. It's so good to see you.
And it's so good to have you with us. You've been at PBS Kids for quite some time now.
For a really long time. Yes.
what's your view on the current state of public broadcasting?
I think it's really strong right now. I mean, all of us are aware there's been just so much upheaval in the industry, so many changes, so much going on. But public media, while we are affected by that, we sit in a different space. I mean, our goal really, certainly at PBS in the US, is to be thinking about the mission, being as accessible to as many kids as possible. And our support is steady. So we have been able to stay the course. And that mission hasn't gone away. The things that we feel like we need to be doing for kids today are still there and maybe even more critical given, learning loss through COVID, during mental health challenges, things like that. We have a real purpose right now in this space. And I think it's kind of more important than ever that we're here, that the US has an accessible, engaging media option for kids, that's also non-commercial and isn't feeling the same pressures in the same way. We are really trying to think about how we are having an impact on kids and making sure that we can be reaching as many kids as possible through the country. And we aren't having to watch that bottom line in the same way that a lot of others in the industry are.
Me about the commissioning strategy for PBS Kids on the linear channel. How much are you commissioning? What types of content are you commissioning? And what do you have to keep top of mind when making these commissions?
As I mentioned about PBS, like our goal is really to stay true to our audience. And so our focus is kids 2 to 8, and we want to be everywhere that kids are. And so our commissioning strategy really now for a couple of decades has been looking beyond just linear, but thinking about the multi-platform options, and really taking those to account from the beginning, into account from the beginning. So we have to be really flexible, and we have to think about how IP can be operating in all of these different spaces. And I think about Odd Squad, for an example. That's a great show to share. It's produced for us by Fred Rogers Productions, with Sinking Ship. And we currently are doing co-production with BBC and TV Ontario. But that project, that early math live action show, is something that works really well in 30-minute episodes. It also works very well in games, place where kids get to practice that math. But we also did that short form spin-off, OddTube, where kids got to, and that was really listening to kids and hearing them say, we want to be agents and we want to talk to agents. And so we put an agent on YouTube to talk directly to them about what it's like to be an agent. And the show has now expanded into podcasts with the Odd Squad cast, which is the radio news network where the Miss O is telling you all the things that are happening in Odd Squad across the world. And so if you think about how you commission like that in a way that the world can really expand and exist in all these different places, all the places that kids want to access our content, that's where I think the real magic is right now. And that's the kind of thing we're thinking about. We're very much a creator-driven network. And so we are looking for creators who can really come to us with an exciting idea, who really can speak to us from their lived experiences and share stories that are going to resonate with kids. So that's really part of what we're thinking about too. And it's really substance over volume for us. Our next big show that will launch in February is Lila in the Loop. And that is, it's focused on a young girl who, and it's on computational thinking. And it's just a really exciting show, but that's really our big show for this next period of time. So we really are thinking about how can we make sure we have this content reaching kids at the moments where they think it where we think it can best connect with them. And we also were also thinking about how we can fill gaps. What kinds of things are kids missing right now? I mentioned learning loss from COVID. We're thinking a lot about those early literacy skills, those early math skills, the things that seem to be struggles right now for a lot of families. And how can we make sure that we are really putting content in front of them that can help support them as they are trying to get their kids back up to speed or trying to get their kids excited about school and school ready?
Is it a similar strategy for acquisitions to sit alongside this commission product?
So our primary focus is really original content and content that we've really had a hand in developing. So acquisitions are pretty limited for us. But when we think about it, what we're really looking for is opportunities to diversify our slate. We're looking for content that really fits nicely with that PBS Kids mission, our values, and our goals. And, acquisitions are just kind of a good opportunity for us to experiment with different ways of engaging with the audience, and things that it'll just complement. But we don't do them as often. We're really more focused on that commissioned projects.
What are some of the factors that you have to think about when talking to partners for IP for PBS Kids? What are you looking for in those partners? And what attributes are you looking for in the IP, including inclusivity and representing the audience?
Oh, goodness, all of those things. Let's see. So, as I mentioned, we're creator driven. So, we really are looking for a strong idea, someone who's has a real passion for storytelling and has a story they want to share, something that we think is going to resonate with kids and inspire the audience's passion for learning. You can tell when a creator comes in with something that they're so excited about and they're excited to teach kids about it, that can be infectious and that will really kind of resonate with the kids. So that's something we're looking for. And that it has to be really tied to that PBS Kids mission. We really need to feel like the creators understand where we're coming from, understand the values of PBS Kids, and the mission of reaching all kids, of being as accessible as possible. And so that really plays out in a lot of different ways. It is representation. It is making sure that all the kids in our audience see characters who look like them or are thinking about things the way that they are thinking about things. We know from a lot of research that when kids see positive representation of kids who look like them in media, that has a positive impact on their self-esteem and their success in school. And so that is definitely something that we are thinking about as stories and pitches are coming in. But for accessibility, we also are thinking about ways that we can reach kids who don't have the latest gadgets, who don't have access to Wi-Fi all the time. And that doesn't always play out necessarily in content, but we need those producers to be partners with us in thinking about what is the best way for this show to connect with a kid who maybe doesn't have the latest thing, and who will need to be relying on just what's in their house to kind of explore and play with the ideas that are coming up in your show. And it's really exciting to work with them. A lot of our producers are excited about that mission and are excited about thinking about not only how their storytelling can resonate with these kids, but how the games that they create alongside can work on lower end devices, can work in and out of Wi-Fi, so that kids can take content with them. The other thing that we need producers to understand is that we are a membership organization. PBS is made up of stations throughout the country who do a lot of work on the ground. And so a lot of our producers are thinking about how can this extend into a community? What is something that beyond the media itself that's being distributed, that's streaming for free on the PBS Kids video app, that's on the PBS Kids Games app, that's on the linear channel, that's on YouTube. Beyond that, what are hands-on things that kids and communities can do with this show? What are the things they're going to want to play when they watch it? What kind of play patterns is it going to inspire? And what kinds of things could a librarian or a teacher or an after-school educator use from this show to help extend the learning in that space? So that also is something very unique about us. It also takes a unique person to be able to think in that very multifaceted way when they're creating content. But I think it's one of the things that really makes us special and makes what we do really unique.
In digging in a little bit deeper to some of what you just talked about, outside of the linear channel, what are those other touch points for PBS Kids to engage with young audiences, educators, and caregivers? What have you learned about the platform or combination of platforms that's best to reach viewers where they are these days?
I mean, we know the kids' audience is so fragmented. They're using content in so many different ways, but also these kids really approach a new device or a new platform expecting to find what they want to find. And so we really are thinking about all the places we need to be. So that linear broadcast is still really critical for us. We know there are a lot of kids who don't have broadband access. And so this is really the way that they're getting content. So we have a 24/7 channel and we have, our member stations, regular feeds that has general audience programming as well. But then we have our streaming video platforms. And so those are full-length content that are available on all of the over-the-top platforms. We're also on YouTube TV, Hulu Live, all of these different kinds of ways that you can stream content. And that's long-form content, but it's also short-form. So we've been doing a lot with shorter form content, even shorter form originals, like City Island, which launched just a year ago now, that focuses on civics. That content does really well in that format, and it lends itself to the curriculum. That civics curriculum works really well in shorter form, with a good takeaway for kids. So really thinking about how that short form can work. And then that short form also, long form and short form works well in YouTube. We know that a lot of kids are there, and we have a robust PBS Kids channel on YouTube. And gaming is a huge space for us. It's been really key to our strategy since I joined in 1999. One of the first jobs I had was helping convince producers to start building games on the website, that could extend the learning of the shows. And that is our fastest growing platform. It's where we're seeing a lot of audience engagement, in addition to all the video. But beyond that, we also have been thinking a lot about podcasts, and that's where we get to kind of the parents and caregivers as well. We know a lot of kids are listening to this when they're on the car or on a smart speaker. And so that means it could be more of a family listening experience, which I think is pretty exciting. It's a great way to get kids and parents talking about the media. We also launch all of our podcasts on our own streaming platforms, because we know there are a lot of kids who don't have their own device, who don't have a way of really accessing podcasts. And so that's a big usage point as well. And then finally, we also have those member stations who are doing a lot on the ground. We launch articles and content for parents across social media channels, PBS Kids for Parents. And then we have PBS Learning Media, which then takes everything we create and maps it to state and national learning standards and puts it in a searchable database for teachers across the country. And that's a free tool where they can find content.
Let's talk a little more about gaming. How
Sure.
is PBS Kids harnessing the excitement around this?
We have for a very long time asked our producers to think as they're developing the show, what would lend itself well to a game? And we want to make sure that those same writers are writing the game dialogue. We want this to be a very organic experience because we know that if a kid really loves a show, they want to play it. So they want to either play it in the backyard or even just, play with those characters, talk to those characters on their own devices. So one of the things that I think we have worked hard at trying to share with producers, but also with the public, is that the games don't just have to be, just kind of mindless time. The games actually can very much reinforce what the kids are learning in the show. That there are points in a show where there's something that we've introduced a foundational idea, but then you can take it to like another level once you get into the game. And so I think that has really been a game changer for us. It means that a lot of schools let kids play PBS Kids games in class because they know kids are going to learn from them. They know that this is something that can have a positive experience. So we offer the largest library of educational games for kids 2 to 8 right now. We have 350 games on pbskids.org and across the PBS Kids Games app. A lot of our games are available in both English and in Spanish, and over 40 million games are played on that games app on average every month. I just think about the legacy and the impact that this has. A few years ago, before the pandemic, I was at the South by Southwest Festival talking about games on a panel, and they had opened that panel up to the community, and there was a teenager there. She was 17 years old, and she was excited to get into computer science and wanted to ask some questions, and then said, "I was really inspired to do this by a game on PBS Kids called Fetch with Ruff Ruff from the Roller Coaster, because I had to create my own coaster and it made me realize that I really loved doing this. I loved creating a game." And I was like, can't get better than that. Like, this is exactly what we're hoping to do, is really inspire kids to want to learn more about that media, to pursue something they're passionate about, and to keep building, to keep doing more.
How are you and the team using analytics around learning and impact to shape some of your programming and digital decisions?
So we do a lot of testing on everything. We do formative testing on our shows and on our games. And then we're watching analytics the way that probably everybody is, just to see like what's resonating with kids, what's really working. But we also have a project called the Learning Analytics Platform, where we work with producers and educators and advisors, and we also partner with UCLA, the Crest School there, to look at what kids are learning in the games, to try to actually measure through that gameplay data where there is impact. And so that helps us make those games more engaging, but also helps us kind of really understand what the potential impact is of this content and what we're doing.
You've done some fantastic work around debunking myths with screen time. What's your message to parents, caregivers, and educators about this, and about the value of services like PBS Kids as tools for educating?
We really want to help people think about how they can use media for positive things. We want to create media that really inspires kids to keep exploring and learning beyond the screen, and to help people understand that they can really leverage that media for learning at home. That there is content out there that is high quality, that's educational and developmentally appropriate for kids. And so, I mean, I think when we think about screen time and what we hope parents understand, it's that not all kids are the same. I think everyone's always looking for a formula of like how much time is okay. And we're saying, you know, not every kid's the same. I have one kid who, so my two kids, one of them would watch all the time if I let him. And another one really only wants to watch for a little bit of time because he just wants to get up and moving. And so for one, we need to set real timers and real limits. And for the other, we build it into all the other activities he's doing, sometimes even as a wind down, so that he can transition to something else. So you have to think differently about the kids at home. But I think the most important thing that I have recognized from all the research we've done and from talking to so many advisors and educators is that the act of talking to kids about the media that they watch, the games that they play, can have the greatest impact. It can have a real impact on what they learned from that media, but also it sets up this habit of talking about media, being a critical thinker about media. And that really will guide them through the rest of their life to be able to really think critically about what they're viewing, to be able to ask questions about it, to think about the source that it's from. When kids are really young, it can reinforce literacy lessons in terms of just like what happened in this story. But as they get older, it can help them really delve into more complex problems. So that active conversation around media, That's the biggest thing I wish that all parents would take away is that you should just talk to your kids about what they watched, even if you didn't watch it with them. Just have a conversation. It really helps.
Well, Sarah, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great conversation and some really valuable insight to learn about the impact that PBS Kids has and the tools that you're bringing forth to kids, caregivers, and educators. So thank you again for taking the time to share that with us.
Thank you so much. This has been really a pleasure.